The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
There you go. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. If you want to contact the programme, 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. I blame the GAA. We're all over the place. We don't know if it's the end of the summer, the beginning of autumn, whatever. It used to be delineated, demarcated perfectly, because you knew that when the finals were on in Croke Park, it was September, the children were back at school, the Late Late Show was back on the telly. It all made sense. And now they're messing with our heads. They're giving us the finals in August. So we don't know where we are. People are saying, is this summer over? I say, no, the summer isn't over till the 1st of September. Hold on to it as long as you can. Stay in your T-shirts and your shorts. And the good news is that the weekend is seeing the temperatures return to the 20s. So that's good news. Let the summer last as long as it can. I'm going to send a letter to the GAA. Stop messing with our heads and give us back our summer. Give us back our summer. I'm back 2 days now, 3 days, and I'm still noticing things. We're here in Studio 10, and in the 3 weeks that I was away, it's been populated, if that's the word, by a new, I don't know if it's a couch or a chaise longue. Is that a chaise longue or a chaise lounge? Or it's a sort of a curved piece of furniture that you should sit on. And it looks like a corner unit, but it's a sort of at a, you know, it's rounded off as opposed to a corner. I don't know where it's come from and why it's here. And beside it is an occasional table. Why do they call them occasional tables? That's an occasional table. It is an occasional table. What's it like? And yeah, it is chaise longue or chaise lounge, because I looked it up because I thought, is it right? Originally, it's in a French word, L-O-N-G-U-E, and then some posh English person trying to speak French thought when the G-U-E thing thought it was lounge, and that stuck. So seemingly they're interchangeable now. You can say chaise longue or chaise lounge, and maybe it's not either. Maybe it's just a curved corner unit. But it's there anyway, and it looks out of place in Studio 10. And then there's an occasional table beside, and there's another occasional table here in under the desk beside me. I don't know what was going on when I was away. Somebody was having a very sophisticated party. Entertaining, they were. There was probably glasses of champagne on that occasional table and people lounging on the chaise longue, lying back, discussing the ways of the world and whether Donald Trump will buy Greenland or not. I see he's not going to Denmark anymore. He's got the hump and not Greenland. He's thrown his toys out of the pram, which is very unlike the President of the United States of America. He says, because you won't, this is me paraphrasing him now, because you won't discuss the purchase of Greenland, which you half own, Denmark, I'm not going to visit you. So there, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Is that the world gone completely crazy? And I know in all the articles I read that there is precedent here that America have bought bits of land from other countries in the past, but that was the past. That was historical, long time ago. That a president in 2019 would offer to buy, you know, a full country with 56,000 people is just, to me, sounds completely daft. But we live in an increasingly daft world, don't we? Like, there's that programme, it's in season, is it season 5 or season 6 now, Naked Attraction. Have you seen that on Channel 4? I watched it once just for professional curiosity. For those of you who haven't seen it, right, a guy or a girl comes out and is faced with a number of coloured boxes, and then they reveal from the bottom up, you know, they take away a panel and then it shows the feet of the person, then the knees of the person, they work the way up, and the people are naked, and then they have to decide who they're going to go with, and then they go backstage and get naked and they go off naked together. Well, they're looking for Irish people to take part. And the debate, the reason I'm talking to you about it today is the debate upstairs was that no Irish people would do that. And I said that there was a time, 15, 20 years ago, when Irish people wouldn't be seen dead on a programme like Naked Attraction. But we've changed. We've changed. We've got a lot more relaxed about nudity and other things. And as a result, I think there'd be a fair few people applying from Ireland to take part in Naked Attraction. The host stays completely clothed, Anna Richardson. She says it's a massive celebration about acceptance and inclusion. That's what she says. So that's Naked Attraction, looking for Irish people to take part. It wouldn't be me. No, it wouldn't be me. No. As you get older, you do feel more comfortable. You do feel more comfortable, you know, in your own skin, I think. You don't. It's that you don't care what other people think. But I'd never be comfortable enough to go nude on telly. I did do it in a park down in Blarney years ago for that American cameraman, photographer, Spencer Tunick. He got 1,200 of us to take off our clothes. And I still have the photograph framed somewhere because that was part of the deal. You got a framed photograph of the occasion. But he got 1,200 of us to lie on our backs and hold up a rose, a single red rose. And he took a picture with the castle in the background. Now, there's a man who has the gift of the gab. He must have kissed the Blarney Stone to convince people to do that. Anyway, it was life-affirming and liberating, but I wouldn't do it again. Now, things that annoy us. Well, Nadia has taken to Twitter to say that she's very annoyed with the postman. And now, it may not have been a postman. It could have been a delivery man. But he rang her doorbell before 8 o'clock in the morning to deliver a package. So she took to Twitter and said this, and then more and more people wrote in behind her, says, it happened to me too. Seemingly it's common enough. Well, there's so many packages going here, there and everywhere. And people are doing so much shopping online. It is completely understandable that people who have to deliver those packages will be doing so early in the morning. And if you decide to purchase things online, well, you have to tolerate getting the doorbell rang first thing in the morning. That's what I would say, but other people are saying, no, there should be a curfew in the morning. That delivery people and postmen shouldn't be allowed to ring your doorbell before 8 o'clock. That's what they're saying. I suppose if you had a young child, and imagine this, you just got them to sleep at around 6 o'clock in the morning, and then at 7:30 the doorbell rings and wakes the child new, and you wouldn't be too happy about that. Anyway, Nadia is put out. Other people are put out by language, flowery language that's used on menus in restaurants. J20 Spritz. I'd imagine that's some sort of drink. They've done a survey of words that appear on menus that annoy people who are reading them. Foam annoys people. You know, I think that's all over now, is that foam thing. I remember trying to do 4 different versions of asparagus for some sort of birthday meal I was preparing or an anniversary meal. So I think you roast asparagus, you turn it into a foam, you turn it into a gel, and then something else. But I gave up very quickly. Deconstructed. They don't like the word deconstructed appearing on menus. Foraged. Although that was big for a while. Foraging still is. Charred. Now I would just think burnt. You know, if I saw a charred on a menu, I'd say that's burnt. Burnt. So they all annoy people. Curated. They don't like curated. Words like artisan, craft and hand selected. Did you ever see that hand cut sandwiches? Well, how else? Maybe a machine could cut them. And then vine tomatoes. Aren't all tomatoes grown on the vine? Pan fried. How else do you fry something? You have to pan fry it. But anyway, people have to fill menus and they have to make things sound attractive, and that's their job. It does annoy other people. I spotted this yesterday and I didn't think you'd be interested, but seemingly a lot of people are. There was an article yesterday in The Guardian about men taking their wives' name as opposed to the other way around. And it comes on the back of a study in America that says that 3% of men change to their wives' surnames. So The Guardian did an article on it and they found that the reason men change their names, their surname, to their wives' names are varied. Some of them just didn't like their own name and they thought that their wives' name sounded better with their name. Others said it was reflective of the family unit. And there were other names as well. For example, a guy called Charlie, he swapped from Morley to Shaw. So he thought that Charlie Shaw sounded better than Charlie Morley. Now, Charlie Morley, yeah, it's just not good, is it? I was thinking then Ray Darcy, Ray Kelly. I think I'll stick with Darcy. Jenny has kept Jenny Kelly. I think that's what increasingly is going to happen. It'll just be, you'll keep your name. I think that's what's going to happen. Psychology professor Rachel Robnett, she says it will take a long time for men taking their wives' names to catch on. As heterosexual traditions are so embedded, you're more likely to see people turning away from marriage rather than trying to reform the institution itself. So there. We've a packed show for you today. Dahi O'Shea is coming in to chat to us ahead of his big event in the tent next Monday and Tuesday night. He'll be live from the Dome on RTE1 television. And for the Rosetree, of course. And it's his 10th year, so he'll be in to chat to us about that. Looking forward to Dahi. He's always entertaining and engaging. And we have Raymond, James and Eliona who are all people with disabilities. Raymond is deaf, James is wheelchair bound, and Eleona is clinically blind. And they're going to be in talking to us about their lives. Looking forward to that. And then we're going to talk to Gypsy Robinson, whose Facebook account has been closed down because they claim... And Hazel, her mother, yes. But Gypsy, we're talking about Gypsy's story. Gypsy Robinson, whose Facebook account has been taken down because Facebook say that her name is a racial slur. So we'll be talking about that as well. What are you saying on 5 on 5 5 1? The football final is still in September, just not the third anymore. Anorak Jack. Thanks, Anorak Jack. What does an occasional table do the rest of the time? Good question, Joe and Leakslip. I don't know. It's standing idle over there at the moment in the corner of Studio 10. What happens, Ray, when you let women take over? Catton and Brendan redecorating, says Bud. I don't know if they had any hand actor part in the chaise long lounge and the occasional table. I work for Fastway Couriers and lads are knocking on doors at 7 o'clock in the morning. This is to try to catch people before they leave for work or school. Please get your delivery sent to work and then we won't have to knock so early, says Stephen. Thanks, Stephen. And I can't understand pulled pork, Ray. What's that about, Kevin and Limerick? Well, they literally pull it apart. That's why it's called pulled pork. And now they're offering pulled chicken as well. I like a bit of pulled pork. And you know, like, my favourite part, I know it's a bit early to mention the C word, but my favourite part of the Christmas fair is the bacon. And I only like bacon if you can pull it apart. It's sort of slightly stringy. That's pulled pork, I suppose. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. What a great song. Clash. That Clash. Should I stay or should I go? 51551. Let's see. Menus that refer to hen's eggs. I would actually get what animal it came from. I suppose, yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I met a farmer one day and I asked him all about pulled pork. He said it's just an overstretched pig. Hey, that's Morris. And I'm sure you've spotted some of this. I suppose you could describe it as hyperbole, really, in some cases, and in other cases, just plain nonsense on menus. And we'd like to hear from you. 51551. We have Celebrity Dancing with the Stars, so why not Celebrity Naked Attraction? Who would take part? Perhaps an honourable member of the British Parliament, suggests John in Dublin. And why is a hamburger called a hamburger when it's made from beef? Asked Betty Daly in Malahide. There was a time, Betty Daly in Malahide, that I knew the history of the hamburger in detail. But I don't know it anymore. Which reminds me, my 7-year-old son is telling a joke at the moment. What do you call a cow with no legs? Ground beef. And I'm saying, well, that works in America. It doesn't work here because as far as I know, we call it minced beef, don't we? But anyway, you're right. Hamburgers are made out of beef. Is it something to do with the origins of the thing in Germany? I'll have to look that up. That occasional table was a chair yesterday. Somebody else. I'm looking over at it because I'm afraid it's going to move, that occasional table there, because it has the look of a table that might move. So there we are, occasional table. Right, 51551, ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for your texts. My wife's sister Colette Maguire married a chap called David Devine. David took Colette's name and they called themselves the Devine Maguires. Is that a true story? Sounds great. I was saying to Claudine Keane yesterday, because she was telling me that up until quite recently she still had her maiden name on her passport. And she's only recently changed it to Keane because they were getting calls for members of the Keane and Palmer families when it came to airport business. And I was saying, if you take a double-barreled name, then what happens to the next generation? And if two children from double-barreled families get married, what happens then? Well, what do you do there? You might fill me in on that one, 51551. Not wanting to brag or boast, but I finished my new jigsaw puzzle in less than 2 weeks. It says 3 to 4 years on the box. Very good. Now, still on names, Hazel Robinson and her daughter Gypsy have been in a bit of a battle with Facebook over the last couple of years because of the removal of Gypsy's personal profile 2 years ago. Hazel joins me on the line now from her home in Longford to tell me more. How are you doing, Hazel?
Not too bad. How are you, Ray?
Good. It's Longford's day on the show today because both Raymond and James, who I'm going to be talking to in a while, both of them are from Longford. James is from Drumlish and Raymond is from Edwardstown.
I'm from Drumlish.
Oh,
are
you,
James?
There you go. He's coming. You probably
We're
know.
Neighbours.
Yeah, there you go. Now, your daughter, Gypsy, what age is she?
She's 17.
Right. And what happened a couple of years ago?
So a couple of years ago, well, she had set up her Facebook page. Originally, we had set it up for it was more so just for the family, you know, so we could share little photos and, you know, it was very personal. She was young. She had it for X amount of years and it was taken down. 2 years ago, it was taken down. She was asked to produce ID, so she got her passport. She sent that into them and she basically got no response. She set up another page again using her name, Gypsy Ann Robinson, and she continued to use that, but for the past 2 years she has, over that time, she has sent Facebook emails about her original account because her original account is the one that meant the most to her because that was pictures of a dog that's since passed away and, you know, like, just sentimental.
And where is she, just before we move on to that, where is she at now with the account? Has she got an account under a name?
So at the moment she has an account under Ann Robinson.
Okay. And the one that was closed down was under Gypsy Ann Robinson.
Yeah.
And she's trying to get back all the photos, etc. that was on that.
Yeah, the original one,
Okay. And how has the correspondence gone between yourselves and Facebook?
It just hasn't. It hasn't. We've tried emailing. I tried looking up numbers, and even when you ring the number that you kind of Google search or whatever, it just says that number is not valid. It's like I found it to be like a complete brick wall.
Okay.
There was no means of communication at all.
And when they closed it down, Hazel, did they give a reason for doing that?
Yeah, so this page that she's had for the past 2 years that she reset up under Gypsy Ann Robinson. So again, she rang me at the start of July and she said, "Mom, they're taking my Facebook page on me again. They want me to send ID and everything." So she said, "I've sent that, but now they're after sending me back a message saying that her name is against their community standards."
Right.
And that in order for her to keep her page, she has to change her name to Ann Robinson. So.
And the name that appears on her birth cert and her passport is Gypsy Ann Robinson.
Yeah,
that is her
everything.
Name.
Everything. She's been christened Gypsy. You know, her name is Gypsy, you know, Gypsy.
Yeah. So. Where did the name come from, Hazel?
Originally, everyone's asking me this. Originally, when I was younger, I originally heard the name on Home and Away, and I used to follow it religiously, like, you know, because we only had the one or two channels at the time. But I thought it was an absolutely beautiful name. And then I suppose, well, later on in life, well, I had Gypsy quite young, but when she was born. It was very clear, very, very quickly, that there was something dramatically wrong with her and with her health. And like I said, like every mom dreams of, you know, you have the room set up and you have, you know, you bring in your little bundle of joy home. Mm. And for us, that wasn't the case. And I suppose as a new mom and everything, and she was taken away from me and she was put into special care. And the next thing, she was put on in the back of an ambulance and she was being rushed to Crumlin. And I looked up the meaning of the word Gypsy. And what I found was that it meant wanderer. And so at that time, I thought that the name suited her because I said, there's this little brand new baby and already she's gone wandering on me, you know. And I suppose both of us, like I said, both of us were one. We were wandering and we were wandering into a future that was, you know, uncertain for us. You know, so I fell in love with the name and I just thought it suited her and it was made for her. So.
And what was the diagnosis?
Gypsy has cystic fibrosis.
All right.
So she spent a massive amount of time in hospital all her life. And, you know, she's gone to certain parts of it. You know, like I said, I've seen her, she's been in ICU, I've seen her in induced comas, I've seen her on ventilators, you know. So, you know, we've also seen children, like, pass away with cystic fibrosis that we all would have, you know, that the ward in Crumlin is like a community. The cystic fibrosis community, you know, we're so closely knit. Mm. And, you know, like, when you see young kids and people passing away from CF, like, obviously this is something that, you know, like, it's terrifying. It's one of my biggest fears over the last 17 years. How long have I got with my child? You know, these are your nightmares you go to bed with at night.
Of course, because it's there, like, it's there in front of you.
Facebook, you know, I know, like, in the grand scheme of things, it seems like ridiculous that we have to fight over Gypsy's name, but for us, like, that it means a lot. It means a lot to have them memories. It means a lot to have, you know, our little private jokes are, you know, just personal things that you have, like, and you want to keep them, you know, and you feel like if you have it there, it's safe there. But realistically, you know, we've seen it's not, you know.
So what sort of things are we talking about, Hazel? What sort of memories and photographs and conversations?
You know, like, I suppose when, with Gypsy having the diagnosis, like, when she was born, a couple of weeks after she was born, I was told, look, her life expectancy is ending between 2 and 30. And I suppose, as a mom, that gave me a drive to, you know, want to show her and fit as much of life as possible into this time frame. Yeah. So, like, we went to Disney World, she got to see dolphins, we went to Iceland, just little, you know. Yeah. But, you know, it's not even about taking trips or anything. It's just about her. It's about seeing her little face or having a conversation. It's all these collective memories that, you know, you get through social media.
Yeah, I suppose, like, when you think about it, Facebook is a huge organisation. It has 2.2 billion people who are on Facebook, and they develop sort of rules, and computers put these rules into place, and probably lacks a little bit of flexibility when it comes to a situation like Gypsy.
Yeah, like this.
Yeah, yeah.
I think even, like, for me, looking at it, for such a big, like, a giant company, you would think that there'd be some way of accessing it on a more human level instead of just being feeling like you're only corresponding with a computer.
Yeah.
You know, there's no communication there at all.
They've had a lot of bad press over the last year or so, so you would think that they'd be better at handling this sort of thing. We've put a call into them and we're awaiting a statement back about Gypsy's case and whether you'll be able to reclaim all the material that was on that original account. How is Gypsy now? How is her CF?
She's actually, at the moment, she's doing quite well. She's still in hospital every 6 weeks for about 10 days to 2 weeks. But for her, that's it's fantastic. We put up a massive fight for the Orkambi. I know you covered so much for us.
We're
really, really thankful for that. And when that came true, it was like, you know, it was like a dream. For Gypsy, it wasn't, it didn't work as well for Gypsy as I have seen it work with other kids, but it stabilised her to the extent where she didn't have to go for a lung transplant. So for us, that was life-saving. But she started on a kind of another version of Orkambi about 5 months ago, and the results so far have been, like, astonishing.
Brilliant.
It's crazy. I'm scared to even talk about it. It's that good.
Isn't that great?
You know,
because they're developing things all the time, aren't they?
Yeah, just the outlook for CF patients is looking really, really good going into the future.
Oh, that's great. But, that's great news.
You know, but, like, it is what it is. It's, you know, it's a rocky road.
Yeah.
When you take the good, you really take the good.
We send our best wishes to Gypsy. We had a case like this a few years ago. It was a high profile case about a place down in Limerick. Is it called Effin?
I heard that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the lady's name was Anne Marie, if my memory serves me correctly, and she took on the fight against Facebook because they weren't allowing her put her address on Facebook because it was effing, and of course the computer saw it as some sort of curse word. Yeah. But eventually, she common sense prevailed and she got effing up on Facebook. So I'd say when the, you know, the human aspect of Facebook sort of it gets involved in this story, that they'll see sense and good sense will prevail, and
yeah,
Gypsy hopefully will get her stuff back. I'm actually sure of that. So if we get the statement in here before the end of the program, we'll read it out, and we'll keep in contact over the coming days.
Hazel. Brilliant, Ray. Thank you so much. And thanks for giving us the chance to get it out there and highlight it a bit, because...
And just before you go, a big year for Longford. Like, Centre Parks, Maura Higgins, James later on, you, Gypsy.
Longford is doing brilliant, and I advise anybody around the country to come and visit Longford. So we're a good bunch of people.
Right. Good luck, Hazel. Bye. Good talking to you. See you now.
Ray.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Paul Hickey has been on to us there to 51551. My mother's maiden name was Slowey. When she married my father, Hickey, they became known as the Slowey Quickies. That's Paul Hickey there. Now, we just got the statement in from Facebook. So this is all solved and wrapped up, it looks like. Facebook has always been based on a real name culture, leading to greater accountability and a safer and more trusted environment for the people using the site. Gypsy has full access to her current profile with the name Anne Robinson, but understandably she would like to use her real name Gypsy. The name Gypsy is not against our community standards, and there should be no problem with Gypsy changing the name on her profile. We will also restore access to Gypsy's old profile, as we appreciate it contains many treasured memories. So that's they all lived happily ever after. I wonder why it happened in the first place, but thanks very much to the people at Facebook for that. Now, we are broadcasting live visually on www.rte.ie/radio1/ray. And the reason for that is that we are welcoming the deaf community to the show today, because the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission have launched a national awareness campaign to highlight how some of our attitudes stereotype people with disabilities. You might have heard the ad, "Just because I'm disabled doesn't mean I'm inspirational," on the radio recently, and we wanted to chat to some of the people involved in that campaign to get their take on things and living life with a disability. So we have James Cawley in from Drumlish. How are you doing, James?
How are you, Ray? How are you?
We have Eliona J. Chai.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
From Galway, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. And we have Raymond Grehan. And Raymond is here from Edgerstown, and Raymond is deaf, and he's accompanied by his interpreter, Michael, who's sitting beside me. So, Michael, just before, will you explain how it's going to work?
Myself?
Yes, yeah.
Well, as an interpreter, I would use one language at a time, so when Raymond is signing, it would be my voice you hear, and when anybody else is talking, I will be signing, so Raymond gets the same information in translation both ways.
Okay.
That's about it.
So Raymond, what we'll do to make it handy for you is that we'll talk to James and Eliona first, and then we'll chat to you, and you can comment on anything that was said beforehand. Is that the best way to do it?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine by me. Yep.
Yeah, and Michael is there on the website there, so anybody who wants to tune in who's deaf can do so. Not often you hear a deaf person being interviewed on the radio, is it, Raymond?
No, not really. For myself, it's been the first time. I can't remember. I've never heard of anybody that was deaf being on the radio before myself. So yeah, I wouldn't know of anybody.
Okay. You're all welcome. Thanks so much for coming in. So we'll get your individual stories first. So we start with you, Eliona. Where are you originally from?
I am from Albania.
Right.
But as I said, I'm a Galwegian. I'm proud to be so.
And how long are you here?
Well, just over 10 years now, so.
Right.
Yeah.
And your disability is?
Visual impairment. Mm. I acquired visual impairment, and that's, for people who may not know the terminology, is my impairment would be visual, as the terminology states.
Yes.
But just to make it more simple, I suppose I'm partially sighted, so I can see and I cannot at the same time.
Okay. Now we're about what? 2 meters apart.
Yes.
Can you make out me at all?
Am I supposed to say that on air? Well, yes, I suppose it's very hard for a visually impaired, low visioned, or a partially sighted person to put to put a concrete example or a straightforward answer to that in saying, I can see this and I cannot see that.
And are you constantly asked that question?
I am. And
does it annoy you?
Well, I have quite an open personality. I do call myself an activist. So if I don't educate people, then it's not going to go anywhere. So the same stereotype is going to be done over and over. So I'd rather correct people if they allow me to do so. If they're open-minded, and sometimes you just have to impose it on people and say it's not right. And more so that it's happened to be done to many visual impaired people is how many fingers are here. And I absolutely hate that. So it's very hard to point it down and say, I can see this and I can see not that. But many people think is you can either see or not. Mm. And I, just to make it more confusing, I tell people I can and I cannot. And I'd go, what? So I am, as I said, very positive and I think quite a jokative person. So I just tell people I can see enough that you cannot play tricks on me.
Right. And are you clinically blind? Is there a classification?
I am legally blind.
Legally blind. That's yes. The classification,
yeah,
is it?
I'm not blonde, though.
You're legally blind, right?
Yes, exactly. That's the terminology. I mean, as everything, there's so many labels. To me, I'm just Eleona. Visual impairment is part of me. And I suppose I acquire it. So it was a big challenge to get used to living with the visual impairment.
And at what age did you acquire it?
Well, it was around 16, and it wasn't easy. But life goes on and you learn to live with it. Mm. I don't like the phrase accept your disability, because I am a strong believer that disability is a terminology, or impairment, or whatever terminology you want to use, it is imposed.
What would you prefer, Eleona?
Well, I'm just me. I'm just Eleona. Mm. And if you actually choose to only see the blindness on me, then you are the partially sighted person, not me. You know? But accepting your disability, whose definition am I to accept? Because if I am a disabled person, I don't see myself as such. You know, so I always say to young people and to everybody I have come across or worked with or volunteered with, learn to live with your disability.
I suppose, do we need as a society then a different language around disability?
Well, that's a long pathway to change the language. However, what my call out there would be is, if you really don't know what terminology to use, really ask that person and say, look, I don't know. And forgive me if I say the wrong thing, but I'm quite open to be corrected and say, how come you're using visual impairment as opposed to blindness? Because that's the only terminology I do understand.
Okay. So just because I'm disabled doesn't mean I'm inspirational is sort of the tagline for this campaign.
Yes.
So explain that to us.
Well, I have 2 degrees and both are first class honours, and the phrase inspirational is thrown at me constantly. I have to say I don't like it, because if a fully sighted person can get a first class honours degree, so can I. And that doesn't mean it makes me any inspirational, any outstanding as anybody else. It might have been more challenging for me. It might have required me assistive technology to read books and access one thing or another, but it is certainly doable. And it just goes out there as a proof, as a role model, that it is doable, and to actually challenge some of the attitudes. Calling somebody inspirational is not the right way to go.
Is it not?
Not in the context of if you get out of bed in the morning and you're called inspirational.
No, but
just for that.
But if you get 2 first-class degrees and it is a challenge because you have a disability, well then.
Yeah, but you're not focusing on my capabilities as a person to get that degree. You're actually saying you're inspirational because you're blind rather than because you're capable of that degree. Mm. And I think there's a difference there. I could be wrong.
It is a word that's used an awful lot about disabled people, isn't it, James?
An
inspiration. How do you feel about...
I quite often get called inspirational as well, but I think the way we kind of need to challenge it is that you might be some sort of a source of an inspiration for a person. But if we look at even like making, you know, the things that make up life, just education, employment, all those things more accessible, I think then it becomes more normalised.
Right. What's your story? You're wheelchair bound.
Yeah,
that you're on.
I have a physical disability called arthrogryposis multiplex congenita, but we'll stick with AMC for short.
So congenita means that it was there from birth.
Yes. So it basically means my upper and lower limbs are fused. So I use a wheelchair as well, and I have scoliosis of the spine as well.
What age are you?
26.
Okay.
So I went through mainstream education. And I'm one of nine as well. I fought for me spuds, so I did.
Spuds, did you?
Yeah, I got spuds, yeah. Okay. They say I'm spoiled as the youngest as well, but I think I was just looked after well.
So
I went through mainstream education with the support of an SNA and then with Breach right up to secondary school and then into university then. And I had support such as a personal assistance service, assistive technology, accessible accommodation. So I think in Ireland what we kind of do is we medicalise disability and we look at disability in a medical approach. So for example, for people that mightn't understand, I suppose, the difference between medical and social model of disability is like, just simply an example is that James has AMC, James is in a wheelchair, you know, and I suppose that straight away kind of lowers the expectation of the person. Whereas what we need to look at is the social model of that there needs to be more accessible or universally designed houses. There needs to be a universally designed transport system, more personal assistance or a personal assistance service out there to enable people if they choose to live their lives.
Because 13% of the population, that's over 600,000 people, are registered with a disability.
And you think about that, the amount of people of your listeners that are disabled today listening as well. And that's the thing. Disability doesn't discriminate. It could be me today, but it could be you tomorrow. And we need to start changing the way we think about disability. That it could, like, I'm a brother, a friend, a fiancé, all those kind of things. But think about your brother, your fiancé, your daughters. You know,
you're getting married next year. You just dropped the fiancé in there.
I'm getting married next year, 287 days, I think.
Oh, is it? Right. Yeah, who are you getting married to?
To Ali Kiernan.
Right.
Yeah. So.
How did you meet Ali?
Met online, so we did, yeah.
Right. I just want to tease this out, if you don't mind, the inspirational thing, because I have referred to people over the years, you know, face-to-face in interviews, disabled people as inspirational. And I felt that from my heart, that they were inspirational. And I feel now that I was saying the wrong thing, and I'm trying to figure out why I was saying the wrong thing. And I'm sure there are people listening as well who think you're inspirational, and now they'll be afraid to say it.
Yeah, I suppose people kind of, they empathise, I suppose, more so with you as well than kind of, some people, you know, would like the ad say, oh, you're a great little fella and fair play to you for being out and all that.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
I think they're trying to like empathise with you, and that's their way of framing it, is saying that you're inspirational.
Right.
I think that's where I'm coming from. I don't know if you agree with me, Leona or Raymond, but that's what I would...
Yes and no.
Yeah.
So now Raymond is saying there.
How are you, Raymond? You're from Drumlish, and Raymond's from Edgartown. And we spoke to Hayes earlier on from Drumlish as well. So it's Longford's day. Raymond, you're deaf. Were you deaf from birth?
Yes, deaf from birth. Yes, I was born deaf.
Okay.
My parents are both hearing, they're not deaf. All of my brothers and sisters, we have eight in the family, are deaf. And we've grown up in a very, very strong, happy deaf family. And people will always look at us and say, oh, the poor deaf people that they can't hear. But actually, it's really not like that at all. I'm happy being deaf. For example, you know, for an average Joe hearing person, you know, that they can't, if they could become deaf, then it would be an issue for them. But because I was born deaf and grew up like this, it's not an issue for me. I love being deaf. You know, I went to school in Dublin here, in Stillorgan, and then off up into Cabra for the deaf schools. And it was great.
Yeah,
you know, I'm quite happy being deaf.
So,
you know, there's no need to have that kind of attitude, the poor deaf person or anything like that.
So do you think that people patronise you, Raymond?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
In what way does that manifest itself?
Like, for example, my wife is hearing, she's not deaf. So when we talk through sign language, and people then would often look at us, and then they would say, ah, look, both of you are deaf. But then she'd actually realise, no, I'm not. Raymond, my husband, is deaf. And then she actually learned sign language, the same as Michael there, the interpreter, you know, he learned sign language. My two children sign. One of them is actually here with me today, and we all sign in the house. So, yeah, it's okay for us.
And are both your children hearing?
Yes, both of them are hearing, yes.
Okay.
You know, it's not a genetic deafness, you know. All my nephews and nieces are all hearing as well. So, yeah, it's not genetic.
But are all your siblings deaf?
There's five brothers, one is hearing, right, and the other four of us are deaf, and then there's four sisters, and one is also hearing, and the other three are deaf. So seven, including myself, eight of the children, of the 10 children, are deaf.
Okay. Can you lip read?
No, actually that's something I abhor. You know, it's very, very confusing. I prefer to actually write something down or use the phone and text message to each other so people can read. Sometimes when you try to lip read, you know, you can make mistakes, you know, but when you write down, it's okay, but write down the information is there and somebody's gone so quickly, you know, they don't want to actually have that conversation through written word, like, you know.
Okay. How do you feel about the tagline, just because I'm disabled doesn't mean I'm inspirational?
I feel like that when people think that, you know, it's really difficult to talk about that and to say how I feel about it.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. That's
just
fine. If you don't have
a last for word, just forget.
And just on technology, you mentioned the phone there. Has the smartphone been a huge embellishment of your life? A huge advantage?
No, sometimes I wouldn't bother with the phone at all, you know, because sometimes, for example, you know, I prefer face-to-face, you know, there could be, you know, it could be waiting for that response, you know, and or you're texting somebody, you're writing a text message to have that. So that can sometimes be difficult when you're having a conversation. But it is, in the same time, having the message there on screen is actually easier than lip reading for me. It's much handier. Okay. Sometimes people would say, you know, when I do tell them I'm deaf, they try to shout at me if they're close. And there's no point in shouting at me, really, because I'm still deaf. I can't hear them, you know. So you know, and I can't stand them when people are there beside me shouting at me. You know, yeah. But it's up to the individual themselves. I still can't hear them, even if they do shout.
And what apart from people shouting at you, what other frustrations do you have? What problems do you have being deaf?
Well, there are quite a few issues. An example, maybe.
So Michael is signing to Raymond here.
So there was an example there a while back. Maybe if I was stopped at the guard or somebody come up to me, for example, and they talk to me, and because maybe the two children would be with me and they're chatting away, and then a person will come up to me directly, and then when I actually find out that I'm deaf and I tell them, they actually start speaking to the children beside me. I prefer that. Like, they're the children, you know.
Yes.
You know, I'm not comfortable with them, and they may not be comfortable with other strange people that they don't know either approaching us.
But would the children act as an interpreter for you? Because they can sign.
No, really, it's up to them. I wouldn't force them ever to do that. You know, maybe in the future when they decide, they can decide what they want to do. But at the moment, you know, both of them are still quite in school, quite young. They're 15 and 14. So they're still in school, so no.
Okay. And you, what job, what work do you do?
I don't work at the moment.
Okay.
I'm a house husband, as it were.
House husband, right.
No,
okay.
We have opposite roles.
Right. And James and Eleona, both of you are activists.
Yes.
Yes. So what about because we talked a lot about on the show over the years about the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which was only ratified last year in this country. We were one of the last countries to ratify it.
Yeah.
So have you seen any real change, Eleona, as a result of the ratification of that?
Well, I have a master on CRPD, as it's short known for. There is changes. There's definitely things at least being moved. It's a long way to get to where we want to. However, I do see a lot, and I'd prefer if there are more young people got involved. But certainly there are some changes being done towards it.
Okay.
Raymond just wants to interrupt there.
Yes, sorry.
Saying we passed the ISL, the ISL Recognition Act was passed in 2017. You know, and that was brilliant in principle, you know, and the president signed it into law. And then really there hasn't really been major changes yet.
Irish Sign Language.
Lack of awareness.
Will Raymond just explain the implications of that for us?
Um, Well, so having the Act passed would mean that there would be more equality, hopefully. For example, for trains and bus services, for example, you know, you wouldn't know where you're getting off. Like maybe a train has broke down. There's no information digitally to read. You know, just a bit of technology there. And we have to ask somebody that may be sitting beside us or using the phone, and they will then tell us that something has broke down. So there's no accessibility in that regard. So we're definitely unequal in that regard.
Okay, so it was passed in 2017, but nothing has happened since. Is that the case?
No, very little. No.
Okay.
No.
What message are you sending out to people today? Because I know the ads are there and they seem to be working. They're getting a lot of attention from people. But what are you saying to people? Because people, sometimes when you question people's language around things, then they say nothing, which isn't a good thing either.
But that's, I'd like to particularly go back to the word inspirational. I don't mean in absolutes that people should stop using it. It's great to use it as a role model into motivating somebody to reach their potential or to drive themselves towards their goals. However, if you're using it only on the perspective or shedding light into the disability or the negativity around the disability, then for me as an individual, I stand to be corrected. But my own opinion is, if you're focusing on my blindness and calling me inspirational because I get dressed or I go out or, you know, I have a friend or a partner or whatever, then that's, for me, that is actually discrimination in terms of attitudes. Yeah. The message I have, it will be threefold. For any young people and for everybody with disabilities out there, you cannot fail unless you try it. And if you try and fail, think about the journey, because in that journey, you'll meet so many people. You learn so much about yourself. You challenge yourself. But also, I'm sure you get more than actually reaching that end if you do. To the parents, I mean, I inquired my disability. So for me, it was just a shock at the same time as to my parents. So in terms of just dealing with it, I had also to deal with my parents. I wouldn't call it disappointment, but shock. If you could square it twice, you know, for them. So for the parents, is, I know you doubt. I know there's not an easy world out there. But if you back up your children and let them learn by their own mistakes, then you're there. Okay. You're supporting. To use like a Pat down the street or Mary at the corner shop, if you open just a little bit your attitude towards disabled people, I'm sure the society in Ireland would be better. And it'll, you know, we have a caring attitude in Ireland. Let's just use that caring in the right way, okay, rather than hitting the stereotypes.
Now, we have some questions for you, but we have to go to an ad break and to Noakt. So will you stay with us and we just put a couple of questions. Any other questions you have for Raymond, James or Eliona, you can get them into us at 51551 or ray@rte.ie, and we'll put the questions to them after a quick break and then we'll go to Noakt.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission have launched a national awareness campaign, I suppose, to get us to question our attitudes that may stereotype people with disabilities. Eliona is sort of nodding in agreement there. And we have Eliona, James and Raymond with us. Eliona is partially sighted, James is in a wheelchair and Raymond is deaf. And I used a term there which I don't think I've ever used before in my life. And as I was saying it, I knew it was wrong. I described James as wheelchair bound. And of course, that's not the correct term, is it?
No, I suppose some people would say wheelchair bound to that, but I suppose the better term would be to say wheelchair user. I suppose, yeah. I use my wheelchair like you use your legs. I use my PA to do daily tasks like you use your arms, you know? So yeah. I suppose that's the term people kind of...
Yeah, I don't think I've ever used that before, bound before. I don't know where it came from, but there you go, and I apologise. And Anto was on, he says, having a daughter use a wheelchair, I'd never say wheelchair bound. She swims, sits with us on the sofa, we go for drives. The wheelchair is part of getting from A to B. I think we all have to get used to a new language. Thankfully, things are changing slowly.
The same terminology goes for guide dog user in terms of somebody who uses a dog as a mobility aid, I suppose, to get around, okay, or the cane.
Yes, I agree with that lady. That's you, Eliona. You've been the only lady in the studio. She's right about not allowing one's disability, mental or physical, to define the person. That's Valerie from Limerick.
Thank you, Valerie.
Can you ask Raymond, for a person deaf from birth who never heard language, what language does he think in? Kevin wants to know, Raymond.
So, well, because I'm deaf, I have learned sign language from birth. So my thought process is then, you know, I would have gone to school, and again, that's how we'd have gone, and everything would be through deaf. I'm 45 years using sign language now, so that's how I would think.
Think in sign language.
Yeah. Yes, exactly, okay. exactly.
Is the difference between saying a person is an inspiration rather than saying inspirational? Is there a difference in that? Padraig is wondering. He's thinking out loud. Back a number of years ago, I had a brain hemorrhage followed by a stroke leading to a brain injury and blindness. I think when people don't understand what the issues are for someone with a disability, they tend to find a box to put them in, which is a normal human response. When someone describes me as inspirational, where it's not patronising, I would take the compliment and not put further barriers in the way of the disabled, says Seamus McPartland.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that, Eliona? Yeah.
I would. It's focusing on the person as the person being and the disability being part of that person rather than focusing simply on the disability itself.
Somebody wants to know what attracted you to Ireland, Eliona.
I hate snakes.
Is that it? So,
exactly that.
And you heard the story about St. Patrick.
Yeah, exactly.
Sean says, I equally take my hat off to these people for the effort and attitude they take on. I'm curious, how does the deaf man you're interviewing, how does he have a Dublin accent? That's Michael, his interpreter, who is.
Raymond is just laughing away here. The interpreter's here using his voice. I have no voice, Raymond is saying. No voice at all.
No voice, yeah. That's funny. Forget the word inspirational. Thanks to your guests for making me stronger today. Job done, says that person. And I worked with a deaf girl when I was a teenager 20 years ago. She was lovely, but I always felt it was a shame that she was, to some extent, an outsider during breaks, as none of us signed, and she didn't speak unless she was very comfortable with people. I imagine it was frustrating, continually struggling to communicate, carrying pens and paper around. I often think that the government could make society so much more inclusive if it made sign language a subject from junior infants in school.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
They do that.
Definitely.
In America, there's a school who does that.
Right, just one school.
One school, yeah. But it's one step towards a future with fully inclusive. So it's something done. It's a baby step, but that's how we all started walking, wheeling, running and all of that. So it's one step forward,
Could you please ask Raymond why there's not a single worldwide sign for all deaf people? The reason I ask is because my granddaughter, 7, lives in the UK and there are regional languages instead of one. Surely it would make sense to have one sign language worldwide to make it easier for all those involved, says Sean.
Well, all world languages, sign languages are different. We use Irish Sign Language in here in Ireland because we're Irish, and in England it's British Sign Language, BSL, and they're different all over the world. But we would actually communicate a lot of the time because there is an international variety of sign. And it makes actually communication for us deaf people around the world very good. And Facebook as well, we would be able to communicate no problem through Facebook, even with people all over the world. For people maybe that are in England using British Sign Language, and then there's the World Sign Language as well, the International Sign Language, what we use as well for communication.
And Raymond, before we let you go, what would you say to people? What's the one thing that happens over and over again to you that you'd like to get a message out there to people to ask them to do something or not do something that would make your life easier?
I'm not sure about how do you mean?
Oh yeah, no. I was saying, is there any message you want to get out today to people listening?
Okay. Some people would think that a deaf person, that they would need help or that I can't help. You know, that a deaf person can't do something. Deaf people can do everything else. It's just maybe if you write something down to give clear instruction. I remember a few years back, maybe 2 years ago, I was in a park run in Longford. And I just went to see, I wanted to interest and volunteer, and they allowed me to volunteer with the park run. And then recently, a few weeks back in Longford town, there was a soccer camp on, and I was actually asked to be involved as a steward. And I was actually, no problem, I could do that at all. So I would like other organisations, other sports, actually to let deaf people in, because people think they can't do it, but we can do it. It's all about communication.
Great. Thank you so much for coming in. I won't say you're inspirational, but I've really enjoyed your company. And I think it's a really worthwhile campaign. And I think we all need to think about our language around disability. And James, you're looking for just universal access, which is probably a long way away, but...
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a lot more. Just to, as well, exactly what the campaign says, just because we're human beings, we are all equal. So it's important to remember that as well, that we might, myself as a disabled person as well, for example, say, might need assistance or whatever. It's just, we need to stop thinking about disability as well as kind of a medicalised way as well, that we need to be cared for and pitiful and all that, that we need to start thinking about, you know, We're all humans.
Raymond, yes, thanks for coming down from Edwardstown. James, thanks for coming from Drumleesh. And Eleona, thanks for coming from Galway.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, you had my wife on your programme during the year, yes. Dahi O'Shea joins us in Studio 10. And, of course, The Rose of Tralee is on next Monday and Tuesday, live from the Dome.
Is that the first time you said that, Ray?
I thought I was there again. I imagine me in the tux, live from the Dome. How are you?
We were watching footage of you earlier on today.
Why so?
Well, it's 60 years of the Rose of Tralee, so we have a lovely montage of all the presenters, and you're in there cartwheeling around the place.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you still do it?
I can actually. Yeah. I'm not going to do it for you now, but I can do a cartwheel. Can you do a cartwheel?
No.
So it's your 10th year?
Yes. Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you ever think you'd see the day?
I never thought I'd saw you finishing up with the Rose of Tralee, right? Not to mind me taking over, and not to mind us having a conversation about me doing it 10 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I remember getting the call to say that Ray Darcy was finishing up, and then the general public heard about it after. And then I got the call from RTE to say, would you be interested in doing it? And sure, it was a no-brainer for me. It was something that I was always interested in doing. I'd been involved with the festival for a while as well. So you get your first one under your belt. You say, geez, I was the host of the Rose of Tralee for a year. And you go to bed in that Tuesday night thinking that you're great. And then you have to do it again the following year. And then you do 5 years. And then Ray did five. So I'm after matching Ray. This is all in my own head, of course.
Right. Like,
do 6 years, I'm after matching Marty Whelan, right? So now I'm second. And now I'm 10. I'm still 7 to go to catch up with Gay.
Yeah.
So 10 years. It's
so that's the goal now, 17, because, yeah.
Well, the goal is to get the gig again next year.
I'm sure you will. So it is what it is. It is the event in the tent.
It is. And that's...
So you're not going to come in to me and say, we're changing it this year, we have a new format.
Well, no, it is what it is, as you say, but you probably will remember there were regional selections and so on and so forth, where there were 64 rows, and then there was a weekend in June, that turned into 32. Then the last couple of years, they brought everyone to Tralee. And then you had this situation, really, on a Saturday evening, where half the roses were going on TV, the other half weren't going on TV.
That was difficult, wasn't it?
It was difficult for everyone, and it was the festival themselves trying to accommodate everyone and try to make everyone happy. And then, I suppose at the end, half the people were happy and half were unhappy. Then you had roses who were sharing a room together, one going on TV, one not going on TV. Yeah, yeah. The roses who weren't going on TV,
families who travelled from England,
there was
Australia,
lots of that,
and America.
So, but that said, everyone knew what was involved from the beginning. Now, there are 32 rows going to Tralee, everyone going on TV, so the TV show won't change at all.
And you've met them all.
Met them all.
You're pictured in all the papers today on a bike.
Yeah, and that's the bike from Glenroe.
Is it?
Yeah.
So you got the bike from Glenroe and then Julian Benson's jacket from Dancing with the Stars.
I purchased that jacket myself, Ray Darcy, right?
Is it? How would you describe it? Is it embossed or?
It's embalmed, I'd say. Should be buried down the back garden. But like I was in New Jersey a few weeks ago, Rita.
Right, no, sorry.
So we went into Macy's. I'm attracted to all those kinds.
Yes, you are.
Few reasons. First of all, I actually like wearing that type of stuff.
Yes.
And second of all, it does catch the kind of paper.
It does. Yes,
and that's what it did.
Yeah.
But I really, really liked it. It's kind of, I suppose, a fancy waiter's jacket.
Right.
Maybe to describe it like that. But
I'd love to see it in the flesh. Is it over in wardrobe?
It's in the boot of my. No,
oh,
it's mine. It's actually mine.
Yours, right.
It's in my car with a big, huge teddy, actually.
Right.
So anyway, that's Shinshkill.
So you bought that yourself? And will you wear that in?
Don't look at me like, did you buy that yourself? Yes, I bought it myself, yeah. But you can see Rita's face going, there was three jackets. Like, it was a few hundred dollars, right? And it was down to $60. Like, hello.
Come on.
Rita was there going, surely to God, please don't fit him. Please don't fit him. Rita, it fits. Rita, it fits. I was shouting across the shop. Oh, Jesus, he'll disgrace us. So there we were yesterday on a Glenroe bike.
And can you tell us what you're wearing then on Monday and Tuesday?
there's a three piece for the first night anyway, I think. Yeah, okay. It's all well. I'm fitting into it, Ray. See, right. They want me to go down to wardrobe in June. I said, don't bring me down to wardrobe in June. I'm kind of a stone and a bit heavier at that stage. Unless you want to...
But it's all that eating on the afternoon show.
There's a bit of that in it, Ray, and there's also me kind of not being able to control myself in a car for a few hours every day, and you pull in and you say, oh, sure, I'll have a ration and sausage baguette, and sure, I'll have a fresh creamy Eclair as well.
When you're travelling from Galway down to Cork.
Yeah. So I try to be good, and I made it as far as Christmas, say, 2 years ago. I made it as far as Patrick's Day this year, and then after that, then, because I know I'll have time to lose it, but I found it kind of harder to lose it last year. Then this year, I kind of put in a big effort, so I've been eating.
You look great.
Thank you.
You look fresh and fit.
Yeah, I am. I'm all that, but like, I'm so sick of lentil soup. I'm sick of grilled chicken. I'm sick of water. I'm sick of gym. I actually curse at the gym machines and stuff.
I think most people do.
Not out loud though.
And you're sporting a Guns N' Roses t-shirt.
Listen. Back to where I bought the jacket. This should go inside the jacket.
And how much was that? Was that on offer?
About $10. I can't leave a Guns N' Roses jacket behind me or a t-shirt behind me at all.
And you were there yesterday, and of course you're given out there to the you're interviewed by the journalists, and they all want to know about the Rose Tralee and where does it stand in 2019 and modern society and women and what stories to tell about women. And what do you say?
I got this thing for a long time that, and you might have gotten it as well, Ray, when you were there, that the Rose of Tralee was out of date, okay, and it was old fashioned. So I sat down, I thought about that, I said, hang on a second, like you need an answer for that, just to knock that in the head. So we were just chatting to the Rose themselves, and like I said, the Rose of Tralee is a celebration of Irish women. So when is a celebration of Irish women out of date? Never. So then you have different things floating around these days. Like empowerment is a big one. So I was chatting to the Roses just about empowerment and getting from them what I got. And this was the essence of the whole thing, that they found it that it's very, very empowering that you go up on stage in front of 2,000 people inside in the dome. You're chatting to a relative stranger. I know them for a week, but stranger, if you like. And they're telling their own life story. They're telling stuff that embarrassed them, funny stories. And then you have Roses going into telling stories how they lost maybe a mom or a dad or a brother or a sister. And they do this in front of 2,000 people in the audience and how many 100,000 people at home. And you're standing there, warts and all the story. And I think that's just a very, very, there's a strong message there. And you have, I think it might have been overlooked in the last couple of years. And hang on, we all focus on the party pieces, the mad stuff, the funny jackets that you wear at the launch and so on and so forth. But behind all that, you have real stories, real people. These are grown women who have achieved a lot in sport, a lot in education, a lot with charities, and a lot as a human being themselves as well. So to stand up in front of everyone, tell them all the good stuff, which is easy-ish, I think. But to tell the hard stuff, I think that deserves a special pat.
I suppose it's easy to knock. I was just thinking today, Maria Walsh.
Yeah.
Like, she's been elected as an MEP.
An MEP, I should have went for it, Ray. Surely they'd have given it to the host as well. Seriously, like. Surely I'd be up there close to a Rose of Tralee winner, like, if I went for it.
What's your prep? Do you have rituals around it?
The ritual I have, Ray, is that I'm just so prepared when I go down there, right? And I'm down there, say, Friday, Saturday and Sunday. I'm in bed early every night. I'm in great form. My main thing is to be in good form going down there. That's why I won't drink for 7 weeks, except for when Kerry beat Tyrone in the Ireland semi-final. Right. Had a small kind of detour there. But that's it. Like, I'm going down there in great form. Yeah. And
full of energy.
Full of energy.
But what about on the day? I know all that. That's the long term preparation. But do you have any rituals around, you know, wearing odd socks or a lucky pair of jocks or something?
I have the same pair of jocks on for the last 10 years. I'm only joking. Well, kind of. But no, the whole kind of ritual thing is to get through the rehearsal as fast as possible, because you waste energy on a rehearsal that people will never, ever see.
Right.
We have a great director, a fellow called Alan Byrne. I'm sure you know him. Alan would have me off the stage at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll go to sleep between maybe around 5 and maybe half 6.
And you can sleep on the...
I'll sleep around 40 minutes within an hour and a half out of it. Get up then, have a few bananas... revive active. and that's kind of it. I never get dressed in the room. I always get dressed over backstage, so I'm dressed before everyone comes over.
Right.
But there, like I said, the ritual I have at 8 o'clock, and I'm not too sure if the production team would like to hear this or anything, but once the red light comes on 8 o'clock, ye can all follow me now. Right. That's my attitude to the whole thing. You can follow me. Yeah, we all kind of know what's supposed to be. Yeah, we know there's three rows of break, three rows of news, four rows of break, four rows of break, four rows of bend, boot camp, escorts, four rows. We'll see you tomorrow night. That's how it's mapped out in my head. Like, so, but the 8 o'clock, yeah, you can all follow me now.
And that's a great way because it's your show. I know it's the Rose's show.
But you're driving it. Like,
yes, yeah, you're the ringleader and you have to do it.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, and I've always said this about anything on TV. Something going wrong for me at work and something going wrong for a bomb disposal expert at work have two different outcomes. Yeah. And you know what? If you make a boo-boo... I used to be kind of worried about that in the beginning, thinking, what do people think? I'm just gone way past it.
Are you?
As in way past
I'm jealous of you.
Well, listen.
Yeah, yeah. Comes with age. Well, you're a good bit younger than me.
Thank you.
So, Micheál Óg.
Yes.
What age is Micheál Óg?
Micheál Óg is 5 and a half.
Does he realise, will he tune in now on Monday and Tuesday, does he realise what Daddy does?
Daddy, yeah. And
in August for 2 nights.
And take off Daddy and put on Paw Patrol.
Right.
Is usually the answer. Last year was the first year he kind of got what happened where he stayed up, because he goes to bed at 7 o'clock. So he stayed up till 8 o'clock and he saw the kind of the show beginning and my entrance and stuff. And he got really, really excited for the first time. So, but I have lovely pictures of Micheál every year on stage of me during a rehearsal.
Oh, great.
So they're nice pictures to have as well. But I'd imagine, say, he'll probably stay up maybe up as far as the news maybe this year.
I was reading there and you've never told me this before. I suppose you have to save a bit of information or drip feed us information over the years that you were hoping that Rita didn't win. Because you knew that if she won the Rose Tralee, that you wouldn't be able to date her.
This is what happens when you do when you do paper interviews with your tongue shoved in the side of your mouth, right? And people actually believe what you say, right?
And you see, they can't see your tongue shoved in the side of your mouth.
So right. I was there. I said, sure, she couldn't win it. Like, I couldn't ask. This was the tone I was
using.
She
was the New Jersey Rose. She was the New Jersey Rose. I did, yeah.
2008.
Okay.
And you sang the Jumbo Breakfast Roll together.
Yes. Oh, well, I danced. She sang, right?
Yeah. Actually, a very good partnership, actually. Everyone really, really, really happy. But we often speak about it over dinner. So, yeah, I was a judge and, like, I can still remember the first day she came in and she was, like, just beautiful coming in. She had a beautiful red dress on as well and she looked so elegant and everything. And they were asking their question. I said, geez, this one's a fine looking. You know? So from the first day I saw her, I said I thought she was beautiful looking. Then I got to know her.
But did you actually go there? Did you go there in that first few moments? That now I'm a judge.
Yeah.
If she wins and I start dating her, they're going to start saying that was a fix.
No.
No.
Hang on a second. No. So we didn't get together until 2 years after that.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
No. So we became friends.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
No. Hey, yeah. You open your mouth, this would happen.
Yeah. You have to wear that jacket, the one that you were pictured in yesterday. You have to wear that in the Dome on Monday or Tuesday night. Huh?
Do you know what? I think it deserves another outing.
It does deserve another outing. I'm going out to the car now to have a look at it in the flesh. I'm so interested in it.
I've been threatened as well I'm being trolled by people on 2FM now as well.
What?
About just wearing kinky boots. On one of the nights.
Because you've a great collection of cowboy boots, don't you?
I do.
How many pairs do you have?
According to me or to Rita?
I prefer Rita's answer.
None.
All right.
But I have about four or five pairs all the time.
You're not Imelda Marcus then.
But no, but like say Rita kind of, they're out again. Oh, they are, yeah.
Right.
But yeah.
So one of the days you're going to wear, so it's the jacket and the cowboy boots. So you have to tune in for that. 8 o'clock Monday and Tuesday. The Rose Tralee presented for the 10th year by Dahi O'Shea.
Ah, right. Thank you. Garamila.
Never lost it, never had it.
No, listen, you could be called back. You could be called back.
Right. Mary Winston's on the way. We're back tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Good luck.